The Relic by Jonathan Green. The horde spread across the unsullied blue-white wilderness of the ice fields like an oily black stain. Filthy clouds of greasy smoke rose from the exhausts of fossil fuel-guzzling machines, sending sooty trails into the frozen air to mark their passing. Every war bike and cobbled-together truck left a petrochemical smear across both land and sky behind it, marking the horde's progress across the polar wilderness as another region of the planet fell to the furious predations of the alien invaders. An unstoppable tide of savage, growling machinery poured out across the Riven Glacier. Before it, still a league or more away, the stalwart line of armour that the Emperor's Chosen had decreed would not be breached today. Today, at this time, and in this place, amidst the desolate ice fields of the dead lands of Armageddon, the Astartes would make their stand against the green tide. Warbike Outriders gun their throttles excitedly, while those boys clinging to the sides of gun trucks, war tracks, and battle wagons, cannibalized from the captured vehicles of Imperial design, fired off round after round from their heavy caliber shooters in their over-eagerness to engage with the enemy. The drop pod fell from heaven like the wrath of the Emperor himself. The force of its landing sent shuddering tremors through the iron-hard ice sheet, a network of treacherous crevasses fracturing outwards from the point of impact. The echoing gunshot retort of the pod's landing still rumbling across the fractured face of the glacier, the armoured landing craft opened, and from it emerged the instrument of the Emperor's holy vengeance. Autoloaders clattered into operation as the barrels of an assault cannon noisily cycled up to speed. The four blunt digits of a huge robotic fist, easily large enough to crush an orc's skull, flexed and whirred, servo motors in each finger, giving it a crushing force equal to that exerted by a crawling glacier. With heavy, pistoning steps, the revered dreadnought emerged from the cocoon of its drop pod, some monstrous metal beetle birthing from its adamantium shell, roused and ready for war. Biolink sensors scan the rapidly advancing line of green-skinned vehicles. The dreadnought's machine spirit merged sentience, processing the constant stream of information, everything from average velocities to weapons capabilities to wind shear, and waited. Experience won on 1,000 battlefields across 100 worlds, including this emperor-forsaken rock in particular, came into play, recalled from the depths of mind-linked implants. The orcs weren't going anywhere. He could afford to be patient. Revenge was a dish best served cold, after all. Heavy munitions fire chewed the frozen ground in front of him. The foul Xenos had seen him fall from the heavens on wings of fire, like some avenging angel, and now that he was in their sights, they were directing everything in their crude arsenal directly at him. Shells threw chips of ice the size of predator shells from the bullet-pitted surface of the glacier, many raining back down to strike against the dreadnought's ancient adamantium armour. It had stood up to much worse over the centuries. The ice shards shattered harmlessly against its hull, some exploding into powder. As the orcs drew closer still and their haphazard targeting devices found their range at last, the greenskins let fly with rockets, high-caliber shells, and even smoky flamethrowers in their eagerness to engage with the Ancient. The dreadnought disappeared amidst a cloud of sooty smoke and roiling flames, the glacier reverberating now to the explosions and impacts of the orcs' weapons, which were, in general, noisy and heavy on the pyrotechnics, but not all that accurate or effective. And all the time, the orc line surged forwards, steadily closing on the dreadnought's position. Preceded by a torrent of cannon and bolter fire, the dreadnought stepped from the smoke of its supposed destruction, swiveling around its waist axis, raking the hurtling orc vehicles with its arm-mounted weapons. The standard that hung from its banner pole was scorched black and still smouldering at the edges, the halo of iron spikes surmounting its armoured body, glowing orange in the oily flames lapping at its pockmarked hull. 3 times the height of a man, larger than many of the orc machines, and as heavy as a war buggy, armoured with adamantium plates and carrying an arsenal that rivaled the firepower of a battle wagon, it would take more than that to halt this juggernaut's advance. It took the dreadnought's symbiotic machine spirit mere nanoseconds to divine the ancient's position relative to the speeding orc vehicles and select a succession of suitable targets. The dreadnought opened up with its assault cannon and storm bolter again, a hail of hard shells reaping their own whirlwind of death and destruction. "Death to the invaders!" Brother Gerald of the Black Templar's solemnest crusade bellowed, his augmented voice booming from voxcasters built into his dreadnought's body shell. What little of him that was still flesh and blood spasmed in fury, thrashing and sloshing within the amniotic fluids of his sarcophagus tank. "Cleanse this place of the Xenos taint, in the name of the Primarch and the Emperor! Death to the defilers of Armageddon!" The squadron of warbikes, leading the cult of speed in its attack, was the first to taste his wrath. Burning rubber shredded under the attention of the dreadnought's assault cannon, sending several bikes and their riders cartwheeling over the ice, as sheared axles and wheelless spokes stabbed into the ice, flipping the screaming machines through the air to land in broken piles upon the iron-hard glacier. Those orcs unfortunate enough to land at Gerald's feet had limbs and skulls crushed beneath his relentless pounding footfalls. A burst of storm bolter fire found a Promethean barrel lashed to the side of a war track. The fuel inside touched off, blowing the vehicle apart, spreading pieces of war track up to 25 meters away across the icefield. With a series of hollow pops, the rocket launchers arrayed across the dreadnought's broad shoulders sent a fusillade of mortar shells arcing into the pack of vehicles behind the disintegrating line of warbikes. Unable to stop in time, some of the orc bikes skidded past the dreadnought and, having already missed one target, chose instead to rev their engines and plow on towards the advancing line of Astarte's armour. 3 bikes crashed and burned as Brother Gerald's weapons fire took them down, and just as many again collided with the wrecked vehicles. Many of the orc drivers were horrified to discover that the dreadnought still stood after their concerted bombardment of it, and swerved at the last moment to avoid the immovable hulk. But one wasn't quick enough, and cleared the choking exhaust trail of another bike to find itself directly on top of the dreadnought. The warbike hit Brother Gerald with the force of an orc rocket. Even as the bike hit him, Gerald grabbed hold of it with his huge power fist, the vehicle swinging up into the air in his grasp as its momentum spun them both around. The orc rider was still clinging to the wide handlebars when a direct hit from Brother Gerald's storm bolter ignited the contents of the bike's fuel tank as he released the vehicle at the height of its rising arc. The bike spun through the air above him and became a fiery comet, annihilating another orc rider that was rounding on the dreadnought as the bike crashed back down to earth. The dreadnought's deep strike insertion and deadly combination of cannon and bolter fire had decimated the front line of the orc speed freaks, and all the while, unheard over the roar of bike and truck, assault cannon and bolter, as well as the concussive booms of fuel tank explosions, Brother Gerald called down the wrath of the Emperor and his Primarch on the heads of the Xenos filth. The Promethean roar of crude orc engines was joined by the well-tuned growl of the superior Astarte's armour as the bikes of the Black Templar's rapid deployment force and its supporting landspeeder squadron closed on the drop pod's homing beacon. If the orcs had been surprised by the fury of the dreadnought's initial attack, it proved to be only a foretaste of what was to come, as Anzagar's Avengers, the strike force mustered in memory of the fallen Emperor's champion, engaged the enemy. Clouds of bitter sweet incense swirled and ascended into the vault of the battle chapel, filling the cathedral space with a sparkling, aromatic mist. Shapes swam in and out of the constantly shifting vapours, giving glimpses of fluted columns 100 meters tall. Skull and cross adorn the buttresses and statues commemorating the fallen of the chapter. The skull-set glow-globes had been dimmed, and the forests of candles were in the process of being snuffed out by a trundling Canabite servitor, while its partner, following on behind, proceeded to trim their wicks and clear away the crusted wax that coated the black iron candelabra like a series of frozen cataracts. The sound of the pitted oak doors opening. The doors, so old now, the wood was black, resounded throughout the battle chapel like the boom of distant gunfire. Chaplain Wolfram opened his eyes, finishing the prayer that was on his lips. He rose to standing from where he had been kneeling before the solemnous shrine, his eyes falling once again upon the empty indentations where the black sword, the champion's laurel-wreathed helm, and the lovingly ornamented armour of faith should have lain. Wolfram turned, one arm at hand, every knuckle of the gauntlet embossed with the Templar's black cross and white skull insignia, a permanent memento mori to the one charged with watching over the souls of the Crusaders, closing around the haft of his Crozius Arcanum. The ancient artifact was both a chaplain's badge of office and a potent weapon in its own right. A disruptor generator was concealed within the wooden shaft of the relic, that one simple addition turning the flared blades of the Templar cross that surmounted it into a lethal power axe. The sound of echoing footfalls on the stone flag floor of the cathedral space carried to the chaplain through the muffling clouds rising from the glowing nuggets of flame-flecked incense smouldering within the braziers. Chaplain Wolfram relaxed his grip on his Crozius. The booming footsteps came closer, the incense smoke parting as a colossal shape that was neither man nor machine but something of both, something greater than either, stepped into the light of the candles that guttered in the breeze of its advance. Wolfram noted the battle-damaged banner pole and the deeply etched Gothic lettering upon the dreadnought's hull, and bowed.
"In the name of him enthroned on holy terror, well met, Brother Gerald," he said. "And what brings you to this place of sanctuary? Still an hour from matins."
"May the Emperor's blessing be upon you, Brother Chaplain," the machine-tempered voice of the ancient responded.
"You are not slumbering with your brother dreadnoughts aboard forward ship Goliath?"
"Now is not the time for rest."
"But our recent endeavours on Armageddon have cost us dear," the chaplain warned. "Rest is what is needed now."
"I cannot sleep, brother. Not when there is still so much of his holy work left undone. And besides, I have slept for long enough already."
"Then what can I do for you, brother?" the chaplain asked.
"I would seek your counsel,"
the dreadnought said in a voice like the slamming of sepulchred doors.
"From me, brother?" Wolfram asked, caught off guard for a moment by Brother Gerald's honesty. Ancients were usually the ones who shared their hard-won wisdom with the rest of the chapter. They were not the ones who came seeking it from others.
"You are troubled."
"Yes, I am troubled, Brother Chaplain," the dreadnought broke off.
"Speak, brother. You have nothing to feel ashamed of."
"But I do."
"I see. You speak of the loss of Brother Ansgar."
"I do, brother. When the Emperor's Chosen One needed me most, I was found wanting."
"You have prayed about this."
"I have sat in penitent vigil ever since my return to the fleet. I have thought on Brother Ansgar's fate and nothing else."
"I too have spent time in prayer and contemplation on the same matter," Wolfram admitted.
"You have, brother."
"I have. You cannot blame yourself for what happened. Blame the beast, the heretic Xenos, that blight the world below still. Purge yourself of your guilt in the crucible of war. Smite the Xenos with bolter and fist and cannon, all in the name of vengeance. Use the rage that the Emperor has placed within your soul to bring down his wrath upon the greenskin. Show no remorse. Show the alien no pity, and you will have nothing to fear.
Silence descended between the chaplain and Dreadnought as the latter considered the former's words.
So, you believe that this is all part of some greater plan? His divine plan for Armageddon, for our crusade, for me?
I do not know, Brother Gerald, Wolfram admitted with a shake of his head. But what I do know is that no one has come forward since to take on the mantle of champion, having received his divine inspiration, and there are plenty who would be ready for such a role.
So you believe Brother Ansgar is still alive?
The Dreadnought's augmented voice suddenly sounded strangely like that of a young petitioner, yet to be admitted to the Brotherhood, desperate for reassurance.
That is what I know. Somewhere, and perhaps only barely, but the Emperor would not leave us without a source of inspiration to lead us at a time such as this, with the conflict to decide the fate of this world still raging around us. And Brother Ansgar does not have to fight alongside us to inspire we of the Solemnest Crusade to great deeds.
Incense smoke coiled about the motionless form of the monolithic Dreadnought. When Brother Gerald spoke again, the vibration of his voxcasters sent ripples through the curling smoke, creating new eddying patterns within it.
"Then my cause is plain," he said.
Chaplain Wolfram looked up at the scrollwork decorations of Gerald's Dreadnought lock sarcophagus.
"This day I vow that I shall not rest until Brother Ansgar has been found, and we bear him back in triumph, or that we may lay his body to rest and reclaim the relics of our chapter, the sanctified weapons that are the most potent symbols of his office. I shall petition Marshal Brandt to muster an army that we might avenge Brother Ansgar and our chapter against the orcs of the Bloodscar tribe," the Dreadnought said. "And then we shall return to Armageddon."
Brother Gerald surveyed the wreckage that was all that remained of the Speed Freak's expeditionary force. The cult's predilection for speed had proved their undoing. Stronger armor and better armament would have perhaps given them a better fighting chance against the inviolable armor of the Black Templar's battle force. Sensors that saw in wavelengths ranging from infrared to ultraviolet scanned the devastation, searching for life signs. If any greenskin had survived the Black Templar's rout, they would not remain alive for long. The once pristine white wilderness was now befouled with the gouged ruts of tire tracks, blackened mounds of snow and ice thrown up by the artillery shells of both sides, promethium spills and fossil fuel slicks turning the ice desert black. Some puddles still burned, the oily smoke rising from them, adding their own acrid pollution to the devastated wilderness. Impact craters pockmarked the glacier, where some heavy shells had missed their targets. Where others had hit, debris from large orc vehicles lay strewn across the snow. The cult's battle wagon had met its end when the machine spirit of Tech Marine Isandor's personal Razorback transport targeted the battle wagon's primary weapon power cell. A single directed pulse from the Razorback's twin-linked las cannon and the resulting detonation had not only taken out the gun-bristling battle wagon itself, but also a gun truck, a war buggy, and three assorted war bikes. This had also been the turning point in the battle, a devastating blow from which the orcs never recovered. All that was left of them now were the piles of burning debris, blackened craters in the ice, and piles of crushed and eviscerated carcasses. Brother Gerald stood at the centre of the devastation, amidst the splintered axle shafts, buckled wheel housings, and twisted chassis of the orcs' ramshackle vehicles. Behind the imposing presence of the watchful Dreadnought massed the Black Templars of the Solemnest Crusade. That same crusade had set out 12 years before to avenge the atrocity perpetrated against the Templars' chapter keep on the world of Solemnis by the greenskins that fought under the banner of the Scarred Orc. There were injuries among the crusaders, the most severe being the loss of a limb sustained by Brother Baldulf under the wheels of an orc warbike. Although it wouldn't stop him from marching in battle alongside his brethren, his chainsword held high. But there were no brothers to mourn that day, to be marked on the roll of the fallen, maintained within the battle chapel, at the heart of the Solemnis Fleet's flagship battle barge, the Divine Fury. The Emperor was truly smiling upon their endeavours that day. For 63 verified enemy kills, not one Black Templar had fallen to the Cult of Speed. It was all the proof Brother Gerald needed to feel vindicated that their search for their lost champion was the will of him enthroned on Holy Terror. Brother Gerald gave thanks to the Emperor, the Primarch Dorn and Lord Sigismund, their chapter founder, that their sanctified bolt guns had functioned fully during their battle with the Greenskins, and that not one of their war machines had been damaged beyond repair during the conflict. The Black Templar's Landspeeder Squadron had decimated the Orc bikes and trucks. The Rhinos and Razorbacks finished off what Typhoon and Tornado had started, while the Space Marine Bike Squadron and two manned attack bikes had harried those Orcs that attempted to flee the battlefield. The bark of a storm bolter firing echoed across the ice field, like the retort of a heavy artillery piece. It had a number of the Black Templars racking the mounds of debris and bodies with bolter gun and flamer, seeking the source of that sound, ready to bring the fight to the enemy once again. Instead, they found Brother Gerald, blue smoke coiling from the muzzles of his heavy storm bolter, a weapon so large it would not look out of place mounted on one of the fleet's precious predators or vindicators. The body of a greenskin Gerald had targeted spasmed as it was blown in two by the mass reactive rounds. Tech Marine Isandor approached Gerald. The Dreadnought dwarfed even the crimson armored Tech Marine, whose twitching servo arm, which seemed to move with a life of its own, made him appear even taller than the average superhuman space marine. Behind him, Isandor's servitor team were making repairs to superficial damage sustained by the Razorback in the battle, or keeping an unstinting watch over those working on the machine, depending on their designation and degree of sentient programming. Sensing the Tech Marine's presence before he had a chance to speak, Gerald asked,
"Are our brothers ready to move on the objective again?"
"Affirmative, brother," the other replied in that familiar, emotionless way of his that was out of character when compared with the passion and zeal exhibited by the rest of the Crusade's fanatical warriors.
"At your command. How far do you judge us to be from our target?"
12.076 kilometers, the Tech Marine intoned. It had been remarked upon on more than one occasion that Isandor was more akin to the machines to which he maintained than his brother Space Marines.
"And the nature of the signal," Gerald said. "Is it still as it appeared from orbit?"
"More so," Isandor said. "As hypothesized, the anomalous readings detected from orbit are indicative of some form of primitive teleportation technology." Grim satisfaction warred with Gerald's overriding sense of guilt and barely suppressed rage. The memory of the moment Gerald witnessed the mech-enhanced greenskin war boss teleport out of the devastated mech boy's lab blazed within his mind as hot and red as the moment when he had been cut down by a rusting cybernetic claw that had earned him the privilege of being encased within the Dreadnought shell that had formerly been the living tomb of ancient Brother Dedric. The moment Emperor's champion Ansagar had been taken from right in front of him replayed itself through his mind for what seemed like the thousandth time. He saw himself closing on the alien tyrant again, a sphere of crackling emerald light surrounding the orc and his unconscious prisoner. He watched again as the green glare of the crackling shield intensified. And then, just as his crashing steps brought him within reach of the Xenos brute, with a subsonic boom, the sphere of light imploded, plunging the ruins of the laboratory into sudden darkness. Only a retina-searing afterimage remained, trapped within the sensor-linked optic nerves of Gerald's physical body,
but of Empress Champion Anzagar and the alien war boss Morkrull Grimskar, there was no sign.
"Then the command is given," Gerald said simply.
Wherever the orcs were, using their wildly unpredictable teleportation technology, there was the possibility that the reconstructed Grimskar nemesis of the Solumnus Crusade would be there too. And if the greenskin war boss was there, there was also the possibility that they would find Ansgar too. Isandor made an adjustment to the signum he held out before him in one crimson gauntlet. Servo motors whined as the dreadnought turned to observe the tech marine with its faceless sarcophagus front.
"Brother Isandor, is there something else?"
"I am picking up another signal," the tech marine said.
"Another teleport signal?" Gerald asked.
"No, it is weak, like a resting pulse."
"What is its source?"
"Bearing 067.3.
"And what would you hazard is the nature of this signal?"
"There is a 52% probability that it is electromagnetic interference caused by isotopes buried in the bedrock beneath the glacier," the tech marine explained. "But there is also a 23% probability that it is interference caused by the disruption of the planet's magnetic field by the teleportation matrix. One way or the other, probability tells us that it probably is not worth pursuing."
"But what of the other 25%? Gerald inquired.
"There is a possibility it is a signal from a dormant power source, but it is unlikely."
"What sort of power source?" Gerald pressed.
"Like that of a dying power cell."
"As might be found inside a Deathwind automated weapon system, or a dreadnought."
"It is increasingly unlikely, but still a slim possibility," Isandor persisted, but prepared to have his logic refuted.
"If our mission is to find the source of the teleport signal, I would recommend that we move on that target forthwith and ignore this weaker signum reading."
The knowledge that there was a possibility, no matter how slim, that the signal was the last sign of a lost brother dreadnought, whether Templar or otherwise, played on Gerald's mind. Dreadnoughts were potent weapons of the Astartes chapters and revered relics. An entire battle force would willingly fight to reclaim a fallen dreadnought brother. Only in the direst circumstances would a Space Marine commander abandon such a sacred relic to the field of battle. To recover such a potent treasure, whatever chapter it might belong to, would be of incalculable value to the war effort. Just one dreadnought could help bolster the Astartes forces on one of Armageddon's numerous war fronts. And who knew what impact that could have in the long term on the struggle for the contested planet?
"I respect your opinion, Brother Tech Marine. You know that. You and your brethren of the Forge have tended me on numerous occasions. But you see only the logic of variables and algorithms. I have the benefit of experience and the wisdom of years, and I disagree. We shall investigate the source of this other signal, and then, when we have resolved what it is, we will press on towards our primary objective."
"Very well, brother," Isandor conceded. "As you wish."
The dreadnought turned to survey the reordered ranks of the Black Templar's strike force.
"Brothers!"
he declaimed, his voice booming over the burning battlefield, flurries of snow hissing as they melted in the licking flames of the Promethean fires.
"The word is given, in the name of the Emperor, Primarch Dorne, and Lord Sigismund. Move out!" "Is this the place?"
Gerald asked, scanning the blizzard-scoured ice valley. The ice sheet rose up before them, to meet the frozen slopes of a ridge of razor-edged peaks, beyond which curious green corpuscent flickered and danced across the sky.
"Affirmative,"
Tech Marine Isandor replied, consulting the signum in his hand once more. The hulking black dreadnought and the crimson-armoured Tech Marine stood before a wall of blue ice, as solid and as impenetrable as rockcrete.
"So where, precisely, is the source of the signal?"
6.89 meters downwards. If we are to discover the source of the signal, we are going to have to dig.
Then we dig, Gerald stated bluntly. Leave it to me, brother, Isildur said.
The Tekmarine signalled the waiting column.
Brothers Lars and Niall, he said,
summoning those two crusaders. Gerald understood what it was he had in mind. Lars, flamer in hand, and Nye bearing his thrice-blessed melter gun, joined them before the wall of blue ice.
Brothers, Gerald said, let the Emperor's holy fire cleanse these Xenos-blighted lands.
Tekmarine Isildur directed their fire. Lars and Niall hid the glacier with everything their weapons could muster. Initiate Tobrakan brought his bike up to join them and directed a series of searing blasts from the plasma gun mounted on the front of his machine at the glacier. When the steam and mist cleared, brothers Lias and Niall stepped up again, while Initiate Ison drove his attack bike forward. Gunner Lyax turning his multi-melter on the meters-thick ice. The Space Marine's flamers and plasma weapons swiftly melted a shaft through the ice to the source of the signal Isildur had located via his signum. Steaming geysers of cloud rose from the hole in the glacier as the boiling water bubbling at the bottom of the pit recondensed as it came into contact with the cold air.
Now then, Brother Tekmarine, Gerald said,
standing at the edge of the cone-shaped shaft.
Let us see what lies buried here.
Using his servo arm to assist him in his descent, Tekmarine Isildur clambered into the steaming shadows of the ice pit. The rest of the strike force waited in tense anticipation to see which would be proved right, the Tekmarine or the Dreadnought. Bracing himself within the shaft, Isildur looked down at the shadow still locked beneath one last remaining layer of ice.
You were right,
his voice rose from the bottom of the pit. There was no hint of annoyance or praise in its tone.
I am right, the Dreadnought rumbled, with righteous satisfaction.
Do we wake him? The Tekmarine asked, something like awe tinging his words, as he stared down at the statuesque creation of frost-rimmed adamantium beneath him. A faint red glow pulsed weakly behind the ice, and yet as regular as a heartbeat.
He is a brother Space Marine.
He is a Crimson Fist, the Tekmarine testified.
But our brother nonetheless. So we wake him.
He remembered.
Thunder rumbling over the ice fields and frozen, broken peaks of the Deadlands. It was the crack and boom of heavy artillery fire. The iron-hard ground shook with the force of an earthquake, more so than it did at his own wrathful steps. He remembered. Rank upon rank of Space Marines, squad after squad of his fellow battle brothers, marching against the enemy, their chapter banners flying proudly above them, magnificent in their regal blue power armor, their left hands blood red, recalling the ceremony conducted at the initiation of new chapter masters in the former Imperial Fists Legion, their battle-consecrated bolt guns, kinched tight to their chest plates, ready to deliver the Emperor's ultimate justice to the enemy. He remembered. The war machine, a stomper, the rank-and-file troops of the Armageddon PDF had called it, a mobile war altar dedicated to the hated greenskins' brutal heathen gods, an icon to thoughtless bloodshed and mindless destruction. He remembered. Marching to war across the bitter wastes, shoulder to shoulder with his battle brothers, the Orc host charging to meet them, the glacier's surface fracturing beneath the greenskins' advance, the freezing wind as sharp and as cold as a blade of ice slicing the air between them. And he remembered, faced with insurmountable odds, a new strategy had to be formed, shaped within the heat of battle. He remembered volunteering, proud that he should be the one to bring an end to this conflict. He remembered sound and heat and light. He remembered dying a second time. And then, amidst the clamour of battle and the cataclysmic roar of destruction, he heard a voice. Brother, it said, awake. The dull red glow behind the visor of the Dreadnought sarcophagus helm pulsed more brightly with every word the Dreadnought spoke. Its voice was phlegmy and cracked with age and lack of use.
I am sorry, brother. What did you say?
A sound like vox-distorted coughing crackled from the ancient, Then the dreadnought tried again.
"You are on Armageddon, brother," Gerald replied. "You are here within the Deadlands."
The coughing resumed, rose to a crescendo, and then subsided at last.
"No. When is it?" the Venerable asked. "My internal chronograph appears to be malfunctioning."
Techmarine Isandor answered in terms precise to three decimal places. The Crimson Fist was silent for several long moments.
"How long have you been here, brother?"
Gerald dared to ask at last.
"Since the conflict began?"
"You mean to tell me that Armageddon has been a contested world all this time?"
the Venerable said with something like disbelieving incomprehension.
"Yes, since the abomination Ghazskull Mag Uruk Thraka fell upon this world for a second time."
"The second time?"
Gerald regarded the ancient suspiciously.
"Tell me, brother, how long have you been trapped here, entombed within the ice?"
Several moments more passed before the Venerable was able to speak again.
50 years, brother Templar. I've been trapped here lost for 50 years.
The vehicles had been parked up, and the massed force of Brother Gerald's avenging angels had formed a circle of unbreakable armour. All were included, from the newest neophyte to the oldest initiate. The formation of the praying space marines served as a barricade against the biting winds that swept across the Deadlands, stabbing at any exposed flesh with knives of ice. It affected the neophytes, Gavius, Feren, Edding, and Gelan, worst, for they were yet to earn the right to wear full power armour, as worn by their brethren, and their heads were exposed. But if the freezing wind caused them any discomfort, they didn't show it. Weakness of the flesh was not permitted of a space marine. Brother Gerald stood on one side of the circle, and opposite him loomed the venerable Rodominus of the Crimson Fists. The latter's crimson and regal blue paintwork was in stark contrast to the predominantly black and white power armour of the Templars, although some of the older, more ornamented suits worn by those veterans among the battle force were traced with gold and red as well. The moaning wind whirled flurries of snow around them, but over the voice of the blizzard, Brother Gerald's booming prayers could be heard quite plainly.
"We shall bring down his almighty wrath and fury upon the Xenos and drive the greenskins from the face of this planet," Gerald bellowed. "For the Emperor and the Primarch!"
"For the Emperor and the Primarch!"
his battle brothers responded with fervent zeal.
"For the Emperor and the Primarch," Venerable Rodomanus echoed.
Brother Gerald had not needed to ask the Ancient whether he would deign to join the Templars on the continuation of their mission. To awaken to a world 50 years into his future, and so unchanged despite the passage of time, and yet finding his brother Crimson Fists, with whom he had fought shoulder to shoulder against the Greenskins, gone, the prospect of fighting alongside the Templars had given him a noble purpose. Here was a chance to finish what he and his brothers had started. For what purpose could there be for a space marine, other than eternal service? If he were denied the right to serve him enthroned on Holy Terra, a space marine's long life and all the battles he had fought, everything he had achieved in his holy name would count as naught. The Black Templars and Crimson Fists, two chapters formed in the aftermath of their heresy 10,000 years before, were both successor chapters of the original Imperial Fists Legion, created from the very genetic material of the Primarch Rogal Dorn. Templar and Fist owed their very existence to the lauded Rogal Dorn. So, there had never been any question as to whether Rodomanus would join the Black Templars of the Solemnus Crusade. They were brothers in arms. That was all that mattered. Brother Gerald surveyed the assembled Templars, the Ancient Fist, and the ice-clad vista beyond.
"It is time," he said,
scanning the ridge of sickle-shaped peaks on the horizon.
"Whatever the source of the anomalous signals detected by the fleet, it lies beyond that ridge. Today, we show the Greenskins why they should fear us. We let them see why we are fear incarnate.
Today we take the fight to the enemy. Today we purge the dead lands of the Xenos plague that blights this world. Move out!
Their acts of worship concluded, with renewed steel in their hearts, shielded by the armour of their faith as much as by the ceramite of their power armour. The circle broke up as the Space Marines returned to their vehicles. With a roar of mighty engines, like the wrathful prayers of Brother Gerald himself, Ansgar's Avengers moved out. The force progressed slowly, so as to never leave the dreadnoughts far behind. Brother Gerald had deployed into the heart of the Deadlands by drop pod, and the Templars had not anticipated having another ancient join them in their quest to find the source of the anomalous readings. There was no means of transporting them, other for them to continue under their own propulsion. But it still did not take them long to climb the icy slopes of a pass between the jagged obsidian black peaks. Initiate pilot Eggleslick took his landspeeder on ahead to scout out what lay in wait for them on the other side of the ridge. He returned presently, guiding his speeder deftly over the ice, compensating for wind shear as he descended from the crest of the pass and brought the vehicle to a hovering halt beside the clumping dreadnought.
"Brother Gerald," Eggleslick said, "you should see this for yourself."
"That?" said Techmarine Isandor, pointing into the heart of the crater that had been dug into the ice,
"is the source of the anomalous readings."
From the Space Marine's position at the mouth of the pass, sheltered by the shadows of the looming wind-scored ice sculptures that surmounted the ridge in impossible overhangs, Brother Gerald surveyed the rift in the ice below them. The Org-dug crevasse was a hive of seemingly disorganized industry. Everywhere he looked, he saw orcs. The foul Xenos covered the glaciers in a thick, dense green carpet as they swarmed over the dig site, the clamour of their mining machines ringing from the ice walls around them. There were customised digging machines, and other orc vehicles had been pressed into strange service here too. Some of these machines bore banner poles, bearing the iconography that demonstrated the orc tribe's loyalty. The site of the scarred orc again, the ugly steel-cut tribal glyph bearing a rust-red lightning bolt scar that bisected its crude simulacra features, filled Brother Gerald with both righteous satisfaction and indignation at equal measure. They had found the one tribe that Gerald had hoped they would. The orcs labouring within the ice pit were of the Bloodscar tribe. Truly, the Emperor was smiling upon their endeavours this day. But focusing again upon the coarse alien totem, Gerald felt rage burn within him like he had not known since the moment the reconstructed warboss Mokrol Grimskar had made his cowardly escape, taking the body of the Emperor's champion Ansgar with him as he teleported out of the mech boy's crumbling lab, smothered within the fetid green depths of the equatorial jungle.
"Is there a teleportation device somewhere here?" Gerald demanded of the tech marine, watching the waves of green corpuscle rolling across the underside of the thick clouds that covered the Arctic Valley. He had to be certain.
"I will recalibrate the signum and fine-tune the signal, brother," the tech marine said. "And there is."
Excitement pulsed through the husk of Gerald's mortal remains locked within the life-preserving amniotic tank of the dreadnought sarcophagus. Had they really tracked down their long-sought-for quarry at last? Was the warboss here? And if he was Brother Ansgar with him? Gerald gazed down into the crater again, and treacherous doubt began to creep between his thoughts of righteous revenge. But it was not the size of the orc horde that filled Brother Gerald's mind with appalled awe and wonder, but the effigy that they had virtually finished digging out of the solid ice of the glacier that had spilled between the frost-chiselled peaks into this valley like some great frozen and fractured river. Venerable Rodomanus saw it too, and remembered. The War Machine. An appalling amalgamation of scavenged weapons and armour, the product of unholy alien engineering and genetic programmed habit, the living embodiment of orc savagery and the relentless desire for war. The monster, for it was a monster, crashed across the glacier, decimating the Crimson Fist's front line. The Space Marines brought their armour and heavy weapons to bear, but it was too little compared to the might of the monstrous god machine that now marched to war before them. Desperate times called for desperate measures, and Rodimanus had never known them more desperate. Something had to be done to bring about the destruction of this angry god, and so, supported by his noble brethren fists, he had strode forth to conquer the beast in one final act of self-sacrifice, his battle brothers falling one by one at his side, giving their lives, all of them, that he might complete his final mission. Weathering shooter, cannon, gatler, and a storm of rockets, the Ancient was able to breach the Stomper's shields and place the thermal charges at its very feet. "The Emperor protects," he intoned, quietly resigned to his fate. Then all was white noise, heat, and light. For one brief moment, the ice of Millennia became a torrent of liquid water again, and the blazing Stomper sank beneath the sodden waves. The force of the blast hurled Rodimanus across the sky like a blazing comet, and he thought he heard the Emperor calling him to serve at his side in the next world.
"The idol lives," Rodimanus breathed.
It was clear to all, and not just Tech Marine Isandor's practiced eye, that the orcs had finished carving the remains of the war machine from the body of the glacier and were now busy attempting to reactivate it, refueling it, testing its growling motive systems, and firing off bursts of random weapons fire from its many and varied weapon emplacements. There was a hungry roar of pistons firing, and thick billows of greasy black smoke gouted from the proliferation of smokestacks and exhaust flues that rose from the back of the alien war idol.
"That, I take it, is not the source of the signal we have been tracking, is it?"
Gerald quizzed the tech marine standing beside him.
"No, brother. That is..."
Isandor pointed with his power axe.
"I see it,"
Rodimanus said. Gerald looked again, refocusing his optical sensors, and then he saw it too. It was a vast assemblage of iron beams and girders, crackling brass orbs and endless spools of cabling. It was supported by an immense scaffold, and yet the whole massive structure hadn't been hidden by the blizzard, and the bulk of the orc effigy standing before it. The device culminated in a huge gun-barreled probe that Gerald imagined to be a beam transmitter supported on strong gantry arms.
"By Sigismund's sword," Gerald gasped.
"Its designation in this war zone is an orc teleporter, I believe," Isandor said.
"We should warn the fleet," Gerald said. "We cannot allow the Xenos filth continued access to such weaponry or technology,"
he added as he pondered the matter in hand. It was clear to Gerald now that the orcs intended to teleport their scavenged Stomper out of the ice-locked deadlands to be used on another warfront and bolster their forces there. Such a reinforcement could turn the tide of battle in the orcs' favour. Such a thing could not be allowed to happen.
"Yes, brother," Isandor replied.
10 moments later, with Gerald watching the heavens as if he expected the Divine Fury to deliver a thunderbolt directly from heaven against the Stomper, the Tech Marine made his report.
"The interference being generated by the teleporter that we detected from orbit is now preventing my signal from getting through to the Crusade fleet," he said, delivering his bad tidings without any obvious emotion.
They were alone down there.
"We are going to have to deal with the Stomper and the teleporter ourselves,"
Rodimanus declared.
"We cannot allow the Greenskins to make it away from here with their idol intact. It is against the will of the Emperor." "Then we shall face the enemy in battle once again. Fight them hand to hand, if that is what it takes,"
Gerald said, his assault cannon whining as it began to run up to speed.
"Just the way we like it."
With the roar of bike engines and heavy armour running at maximum speed, the Black Templars poured through the ridge pass and into the carved crevasse in the ice before the orcs had any warning as to what was happening.
"No pity! No remorse! No fear!"
Brother Gerald boomed as he tramped down the glacial slopes towards the great orc-gorged hole, the toe hooks of his dreadnought feet locking him securely in place on the treacherous ice.
"There is only the Emperor," Rodimanus joined,
urging the crusading Space Marines on.
He is our shield and our protector.
First came the bikes and attack bikes, pouring over the lip of the ridge, past the clumping dreadnought. Then came the razorbacks and the rhinos, the heavy armour grinding over the ice of the glacier, pounding it to shards beneath their tracks, heavy bolter fire riddling both the ice sheet and those orcs that had mustered enough awareness to try to do something about the approaching space marines. The land speeder squadron hurtled over the ridge after the rest of the Templar armour, past the advancing battle force, the whoop-whoop-whoop of their engines thrumming through the ice. The Tornado's assault cannon rattling off hard rounds into the milling orcs as they hurried to respond to this new threat. With a whooshing roar, the Typhoon fired off a barrage of missiles. The rockets corkscrewed through the air and impacted in a series of scathing detonations amidst the moving orc armour. Bodies, armour, plating and wheels were thrown into the air to land in broken, burning piles. With a searing scream, the last cannon mounted on Tech Marine Isandor's Razorback fired, a blinding spear of light burning through the constant snow flurries and illuminating the crevasse like an incendiary shell burst. A moment later, the crater was illuminated again as an orc half-track exploded in a sheet of flame, the las blast having hit both its fuel tank and the rockets loaded into the back of it. There was a crack and crump of frag grenades detonating amidst the greenskin horde, and orcs fell in their dozens. Some of the orcs had climbed aboard their trucks and bikes again. They revved their engines as they turned their vehicles to face the oncoming Black Templar's armour. The orcs were rallying. Gerald's crusaders had made the most of the advantage that stealth and the blessings of the Emperor had brought them, but now the enemy was starting to organise a cohesive defence. As war trucks and heavy orcish bikes began to converge on the advancing Templar armour, those battle brothers piloting the fleet's venerated vehicles urged them forwards, Tech Marine Isandor making supplication to the Omnisire in the same unmodulated tone, over and over. At the bottom of the crater, in the shadow of the dugout idol, the two sides met with a roar of over-revving engines and the scream of shearing metal. Sparks flew, armour plating buckled, axles sheared and fuel tanks ruptured. Orcs were thrown over the hulls of rhinos and landspeeders. Milling grots were crushed under the tracks of rhinos and orc bikes alike. Others among the horde were gunned down by the blazing, blessed bolters of the Templars. The orc guns unable to match the reliability or accuracy of the Space Marines' arsenal. But despite their primitive design, there was one thing that the orc guns had over the Templars' weapons. There were more of them. Far more. It was becoming painfully apparent that the Templars were drastically outnumbered, at least 20-1. Although the Emperor's Chosen were renowned for their fighting prowess, those were odds that tested even a Space Marine. There was a real danger that sheer weight of numbers would see them overwhelmed, if the orcs were able to unify their attack. But Brother Gerald, now part of the rearguard, finishing off those greenskins that had evaded the Templars' guns, had realised this would be the case before he had committed his fighting force to this action. It was clear that the Bloodscar orcs were planning on teleporting the Stomper from this location to deploy elsewhere on Armageddon. Gerald's plan had always been to infiltrate the dig site and bring down the war effigy, or, failing that, seize and hold the colossal orc teleporter until Isandor found a way to destroy it. With a scream of failing engines, Initiate Pilot Egilslick's landspeeder ploughed into the surface of the glacier. An orc shock attack gun had made a lucky hit. A gaggle of snarling buoys piled onto the down speeder, burying Igelslack and Initiate Gunner Fraumar beneath a flurry of thumping axes and stabbing serrated knives. The two rhinos slewed to a halt in the middle of the crater, dropped their hatches, and the troops they were carrying poured out in a tide of funeral black and gleaming white. Bolt guns barking and chain swords screaming, they met the milling rabble head-on. They might be outnumbered, but they were in the thick of the battle, which was the only place where a Templar might hope to win his honour badges. Venerable Rodomanus's multi-melter pulsed, and a swarm of orcs died as their blood boiled and their own bodily fluids broiled through their internal organs. The ice field was lit up again, this time as a sphere of actinic light exploded into life like a miniature sun at the periphery of the Templar's lines. The explosion pushed a great wave of concussive forces. Before it, as a land-speeder Typhoon and its remaining payload of missiles were obliterated by a direct hit from the Stomper's now active death cannon. Brother Gerald stood firm as orc bikes tumbled end over end past him, carried before the bow wave of explosive force. He then turned his assault cannon on the surviving greenskins, now running from the epicenter of destruction, Holy Wrath pounding through what little remained of him that was still flesh and blood. "Brother Gerald," Techmarine Isandur's voice crackled over the comnet, the interference caused by the orc's unstable teleporter technology affecting even close-range communications.
"What is it, brother? Report!"
"We have our objective," Isandur declared, with something dangerously like emotion tinging his words.
"The teleporter is ours."
"Your objective is the teleporter. Reconvene there," Gerald commanded,
his battle brothers hearing him through the comm in their helmets, his words also carrying to them over the bestial roars and bolter fire of the battlefield.
"Repeat, rally at the teleporter."
The device was huge, on a monumental scale that even an ancient such as Venerable Rodomanus had never witnessed before. It was too big a target to miss. The Templars had teleport technology themselves, of course, hidden within the bowels of the forge ship Goliath, where it was carefully tended and operated by the Techmarine masters of the forge and their servitors. But they had nothing approaching the size of this brutal piece of esoteric machinery. Techmarine Isandur felt something approaching heretical awe on seeing the monstrous device arrayed before him in all its terrible, alien glory. The Templars were brutally outnumbered by the thuggish orcs, but by launching a surprise attack, the vengeful Space Marines had been able to penetrate far into the dig site. The either arrogant or idiotic orcs, having failed to post anything like enough sentries to create an effective defensive perimeter. They had probably not thought to be interrupted out here in the trackless frozen wastes of the Deadlands, for little could survive in these bitter wastes other than the alien orcs. But then, from what Jared had witnessed firsthand, it seemed that orcs could survive pretty much anything. The Templars' fast-moving heavy armour had been able to penetrate the orc crater that held the ice-locked Stomper with ease. The Razorbacks and Rhinos ploughing into the aliens and their scratch-built vehicles, as if sainted Sigismund himself was smiting the fell Xenos from beyond the stars, where he now stood at Primarch Dawn's right hand. But now, the initially bewildered orcs had rallied, and were mounting an effective counterattack against the Black Templar's lightning assault, despite the crusading chapter's prowess in hand-to-hand combat. Even hardened fighters such as Brother Gerald's avenging warriors would be hard-pressed to overcome when facing such impossibly overwhelming odds. The best they could hope for was to sell themselves dear. They might not have found their lost brother Ansgar or their nemesis the warlord Mokrel Grimskar, but they could end their crusade here, denying the orc host the war machine that the greenskins had fought so hard to win again. Bikes, in both the black and white livery of the Templars and the scruffy red custom paint jobs of the orcs, roared past Brother Gerald as he stomped across the battlefield. He took aim and fired, the front wheel of a war bike that was pursuing a Space Marine attack bike, its gunner whooping wildly as it took potshots at the noble Templars, disintegrated in a hail of cannon fire. The wheel struts dug into the ice, halting the bike's forward motion. The vehicle flipped over, hurling the orc gunner into the path of a hurtling landspeeder. The surprised-looking greenskin bounced off the hull with the unmistakable sound of breaking bone, while the bike's driver was crushed beneath the great weight of the bike, landing on top of it and crushing its spine. Gerald turned his bolter on a gaggle of greenskins that charged him, large-caliber shooters and clumsy chain-bladed weapons in their meaty paws, a burst of flesh-shredding gunfire, and then he was through. Nothing now stood between him and the orc teleporter, and he wasn't the only one to have made it to the objective. Sergeant Belengir had led the men under his command by example, bolt pistol in one hand, chainsword in the other, dripping with alien gore, and hadn't lost a single member of his squad in the process. He and his troops were now finishing off the last of the resistance being put up by the orcs that crawled all over the vast gantries of the teleporter, an augmented mech boy falling to Belengar's gutting chain blade. Gerald turned to survey the smoking craters and tight knots of fighting that characterized the battlefield dig site. The crumbled wreckage of a devastated rhino lay nearby, as did the smouldering remains of a bike. Most of the Templar armor had made it through to the objective, but not all. Gerald caught glimpses of scratched black and blistered white amidst the bodies of the slain, between billows of smoke from burning wrecks strewn across the combat zone. On seeing his fallen brothers, Gerald felt his blood boil. The machine spirit that resided with him, inside his dreadnought body, informed him of the names of each and every one of them. Initiates Gar, Gunnar Hrelstor, Brother Darien, Brother Igan, Brother Klost of Squad Gerund, Klust's heavy bolter, lying useless on the ice under his eviscerated body. Brother Gerald was shaken from his enraged reverie by what felt like an earthquake. The ground shook, splinters of ice 20 meters tall breaking free of the glacier as the stomper began to move. The orcs had finally coaxed their idol into unnatural life once more. Like Brother Rodimanus, it had lain locked in the ice for the last 50 years. Like Brother Rodimanus, it now had a second chance to finish what Gazgul Mag Urik Thraka's hordes had started half a century ago. At the growl of the effigy's engines, filthy smoke poured from its chimney exhausts, filling the Corellian blue sky with stinking black clouds. The stomper's wrecking ball attachment, the crusher itself looking like a huge rusted boulder, came whirling around over the top of its pintle arm mount, crashing down on top of a rhino with all the force of a meteorite impact. The tank's adamantium plates buckled under the force of the wrecking ball blow, sending the troop transport bouncing off the uneven ice-gorged bedrock that had lain buried beneath the glacier until the orcs had dug it up. As Gerald watched, what was left of neophyte Ferran rocketed skywards as an orc scorcher engulfed his body in flame, detonating the crack grenades he carried at his waist. Raging to the heavens at the death of another battle brother, and one who had not yet had the chance to prove himself in glorious battle to his brethren's satisfaction, the dreadnought turned his blazing weapons on the orc responsible. The barrel of his assault cannon growled red hot. His mind-link's machine spirit informed him that his autoloaders would soon be out of ammunition. But if today was his day to die, a second death, then he would make it his vow to take as many of the blood-scar orcs with him as possible. Gerald surveyed the scorched glacier around him. The remaining Black Templar armor had formed a cordon around the teleporter, every vehicle's guns pointing outwards towards the enemy now pouring over the ground towards their position. The aliens' fury at the audacity of the Templars in taking the teleporter spurred them on, the savage brutes giving voice to harsh barks and hoots of wild abandon.
"Brothers!"
Gerald declared, his voice echoing strangely from the derricks and hoists of the corpusant's sheathed structure.
"This day we show the Xenos filth that Armageddon is not theirs for the taking. This day we show the orcs that we will leave no wrong unavenged, no slight unchallenged. This day we will deliver the Emperor's divine retribution upon the heads of the green-skinned defilers of this world, in the name of Primarch Dorn and his servant Lord Sigismund."
Gerald turned his stormbolter on another charging orc and took its head off with one mass-reactive round.
"Brothers! Today we sell our lives, dear in the name of the Emperor, that we might deny the orcs another victory upon the shores of Armageddon. We have a new mission. We will not depart this world until we have ensured that they may never make use of their teleporter or their war idol again. Today is a good day to die."
With a scream of rending metal, lightning-drenched claws tore through the clugging engine of an orc war truck as its armor plating melted under the intense heat blast of a multi-melter. As the smoke and flames died back again, the Black Templar dreadnought watched with grim satisfaction as the still more imposing and ornamented form of Venerable Rodimanus strode through the devastation to reach the protection of the cordon of Crusader armor, crushing a flailing orc beneath one colossal foot, while snatching the mangled body of another from the wrecked war track and quartering its head between the crimson claws of his colossal power fist.
"Now, brother,"
the ancient boomed.
I am sorry to contradict you, but today is not your day to die.
As he reached the Templar line, Rodimanus turned his multi-melter on an orc bike, igniting its fuel tank. The vehicle and its rider disappeared in a sheet of incandescent flame.
It is not your destiny that you give your lives in sacrifice to stop this blasphemy, the Venerable went on, as if making his decree. Your mission is not yet done. You must live to fight another day.
Gerald did not interrupt, but listened, considering Rodimanus's words as he targeted the orc manning the flamethrower mounted on the back of a rumbling half-track.
This is my battle, brother, Rodimanus continued. It is up to me to accomplish what I and my brother Fists tried to 50 years ago.
The ancient was right. This was not the Templars' battle. The destruction of the Orc war machine had never been their objective. Brother Ansgar still awaited them, somewhere, and it was up to Gerald and the others to find him. It was as they had sworn it. But none of that changed the fact that they were severely outnumbered and completely surrounded, with little hope of being able to turn the tide of battle in their favour now, unable to even call for extraction by the fleet. The superstructure of the incomplete orc device, in whose shadow they now sheltered, hummed and twanged as orcish hard rounds and crackling energy beams spanged off its pylons and girders.
"Do you think you can fathom the workings of this teleporter?"
Gerald asked his techmarine. "All orc machines are primitive and alien," Isandor replied. "But I would predict a 70% chance of success."
"Then set to work," Gerald instructed. "By the Emperor, I want this thing operational and locked onto the fleet in orbit as soon as is humanly possible."
With a dull crump, the speeding gun truck exploded, obliterated by the mass barrage of heavy weapons that pounded it. Standing side by side against the horde, the dreadnoughts Gerald and Rodimanus locked on to a new target, and a warbike disintegrated under shrapnel. Only a matter of metres away, Brother Heruer died as he was decapitated at close quarters by a heavily mechanised orc. Roaring in grief-stricken pain, Gerald broke from the circle, advancing on the creature responsible, litanies of hate spouting from his voxcasters, like bile, as he shredded the alien's augmented body with raking bolter and cannon fire.
"Brother Isandor!"
he bellowed over the howls of the orcs and the savage clatter of their guns, ignoring the succession of hard rounds that rattled off his own adamantium body shell as if there were no more than stings of radmidges.
"Give me some good news!"
"I have subjugated what passes for the device's machine spirit, patching a link via one of my servitors and dominating it with a liturgical subroutine, and, through its transmitter array, have located the fleet in orbit, and forge ship Goliath."
"Brother!"
Gerald boomed, bisecting an orc from midriff to neck with a barrage of bolter fire.
"Is it ready?"
"Aye, brother," Isandor replied. "It is ready."
"Then begin the evacuation."
As the two dreadnoughts held back the press of the orc horde with bolter and fist, cannon and melter, at Gerald's command, the strike force moved back beneath the beam emitter of the huge gantry, never once turning their backs on the enemy, claiming a dozen orc lives for every step they took in retreat. It was not the Templar's way to retreat in the face of greater numbers of the enemy, but for the brethren of the Solemnis Crusade, this was their last action. They could not afford to sacrifice their lives so freely, not when their holy work remained undone. They were yet to recover Brother Ansgar's body and repay the war boss Mockrel Grimscar for all the Munster had taken from them when the orcs of the Bloodscar tribe raised the Chapter Keep on Solemnis. They had all sworn it, every crusading battle brother, from neophyte to initiate, techmarine to apothecary, dreadnought to marshal, chaplain to champion. And they could not relinquish that fight until their vow had been fulfilled. Not when a way out of this impossible situation had presented itself. So large was the orc teleporter, it had been intended to beam something as gargantuan as the Stomper to another arena of battle, that the entirety of the survivors of Gerald's battle force could fit within the circumference of the projection plate beneath the enormous beam emitter. They would go together. That was how Brother Gerald wanted it, whether their plan worked and the teleporter returned them to the forged ship Goliath, or scattered their component atoms to the stars, they would go together. The only ones they would leave behind were one tech servitor to initiate the firing sequence of the teleporter's beam gun, and venerable brother Rodimanus of the Crimson Fists.
"Brother Gerald,"
came Tech Marine Isandor's voice with something almost like urgency in his usually unexcitable tone.
"Our departure now waits only on your presence upon the plate."
Gerald turned to Rodimanus, swiveling about the pivot of his waist-bearing, as if he were about to address the venerable, blasting a leaping, axe-wielding orc out of the air with a single well-placed shot.
"Go, brother,"
Rodimanus said, before the other could speak.
"Go to meet your destiny and leave me to face mine." "It has been an honour,"
Gerald stated stoically.
"Aye, it has been that," the ancient agreed. "Die well, brother, for the Primarch. For Dorne. Now go."
Rodimanus directed another blast from his multi-melter into the press of the orc pack, the heat blast clearing 10 meters around him in every direction. Taking his leave, Brother Gerald defiantly turned his back on the orcs and marched to join his battle brothers at the heart of the humming teleporter, the venerable laying down covering fire behind him, like some colossal avatar of the Emperor's retribution. As he did so, he began to intone Dorne's litany of service.
"What is your life?" he began. "My honour is my life."
An orc fell to scything fire from his storm bolter.
"What is your fate?" "My duty is my fate."
Another was impaled on the crackling blades of his power fist.
"What is your fear?" "My fear is to fail."
As he retreated behind Rodimanus, Brother Gerald gave voice to the defiant battle cry in one last act of defiance directed at the alien hawks.
"No pity!"
Brother Gerald boomed.
"No remorse!"
his battle brother responded, taking up his battle cry.
"No fear!"
they bellowed in unison, clashing their weapons against their holy armour in a clattering cacophony of defiance. Corpescent crawled over and around the superstructure of the orc teleporter in writhing serpents of sick green light. With an apocalyptic scream like the sundering of the heavens, the beam emitter fired. Rodimanus did not look back. He knew the Templars were gone.
"And what is your reward?" he asked,
his voice rising like a challenge against the ravening greenskins.
"My salvation is my reward."
Three orcs fell to a withering hail of bolter fire.
"What is your craft?" "My craft is death."
The multi-melter put an end to another orc bike.
"What is your pledge?"
The venerable hesitated. He could see the stomper advancing on him now, and him alone, belching smoke into the air from its exhaust stacks, its colossal mass shaking the ground with its every step.
"My pledge is eternal service."
As the stomper closed on the teleporter at last, with heavy, purposeful steps that sent tremors skittering through the bedrock that lay beneath the glacier, an inescapable fact wormed its way into the spirit-linked mind of the ancient. This was to be his last stand. But even the glorious sacrifice of a venerable dreadnought might not be enough to stop the stomper. Rodimanus and his brother fists had been unable to destroy it 50 years before, during the Second War for Armageddon, only managing to delay the inevitable by trapping it within the glacier. And now, 50 years on, what hope was there for him as he stood before the devastatingly powerful war machine? But still he kept firing, directing blast after blast of his multi-melter at the gun emplacements that bristled from the effigy's carapace, at the stomper's armour itself and its crew when his spirit-linked targeter could lock onto them. The stomper loomed before him, blocking his view of the crater and the rest of the horde, the macabre god-machine filling his world. Nothing else mattered now. There was only the ancient and the idol, two relics from another battle for Armageddon, ready to make the final moves of a power play begun 5 decades before. Sparkling emerald flame consumed the orc teleporter once more, power relays humming as the device came online again. Rodimanus's optical sensors homed in on the roasted remains of the tech servitor, fused to the esoteric device by its last firing. The servitor was dead. So how was it that the teleporter was powering up to fire at all? It was then that Rodimanus realized that in his face-off with the stomper, He had backed himself onto the empty platform and now stood directly beneath the beam emitter. A nimbus of actinic light formed at the centre of the teleporter, also directly beneath the focusing beam of the vast construction surrounding him with its suffused essence. Something was being beamed back to the teleporter. He felt the tingle of it, at his very core, in every fibre of his body that was still flesh and blood. And the machine spirit of his dreadnought body felt the exhilarating rush of a trillion calculations as the impossible machine read and recorded the position of every atom within his body, the connection of every synapse, the binary pattern of every recollection stored within his memory implants. He was beaming out. Framed by the skeletal structure of the alien device, the Stomper seemed to peer down at him with the telescopic sights of its cannon barrel eyes. Through his one remaining mortal eye, Rhodonimus saw adamantium, steel, ceramite and flesh become first translucent and then transparent. At the same time, he saw something else taking shape within the sphere of light with him, becoming steadily more opaque as it solidified around his departing form. For the briefest nanosecond, he and the object shared the same space, his machine spirit merging with its primitive programmed consciousness. 50 meters long and weighing 100 tons, the energy build-up already taking place within its plasma reactor, perilously close to the point of critical mass and detonation. The torpedo was capable of blowing a hole in the side of an Orc kill cruiser with armor plating several meters thick. The Venerable's own machine spirit continued the countdown to destruction. 5, 4, 3, 2. Suffer not the alien to live, he thought. And then, actinic light blinded his optical senses and the bleak white wastes of the Deadlands, the collapsing structure of the teleporter and the impotently raging Stomper. Everything vanished, melting into black oblivion, and Brother Rhodonimus was gone. The battle barge, Pride of Pollux, hung in high orbit above Armageddon's second largest landmass. All was still within the reclusium. Captain Oberius, commander of the Crimson Fist 3rd Company, was alone with his thoughts and his strategium. There were not many minutes in the day when he could say that, and he savoured those times when it was the case, but such precious moments made all the difference to his command. They were those times when he could step back, reflect, consider, and plan. He sat, the elbows of his power armour resting on the courses of his armoured legs, gauntlets locked together before his face. His lips touched the reliquary that hung from his neck on its golden chain, and which he held within his hands as reverentially as he might a newborn. He stared out of the roof-high windows of the reclusium at the silent void beyond, pondering again his chapter's gains and losses on the planet below, alone with his thoughts and the stars. Footsteps disturbed the captain's contemplations, the sound of ceramite ringing from the stone flag floor, shattering the silence of the reclusium. Oberius looked up in annoyance. Brother Julio approached the strategium, head bowed respectfully.
"What is it?"
"My lord," Julio began, "we have received a hail from Marshal Brandt of the Black Templar's Solemnus Crusade. He wishes to speak with you, my lord."
"The Templars wish to speak with us?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Regarding what matter?"
Oberius prodded further. "They have news, my lord." Brother Julio faltered, as if hardly able to believe what he himself was saying.
"Yes, what news?"
"News of Venerable Rhodomanius," Brother Julio said hesitantly.
"Brother Rhodomanius?"
Now it was Oberius's turn to express his disbelief.
"Brother Rhodomanius lost to us these 50 years past, since the Second War fought against the Xenos for this world."
"Yes, my lord," Julio confirmed. "But lost no longer. Venerable Rhodomanius has returned."
Thanks for watching, everybody. I don't know how I feel about this story. To be honest, I remembered it, so I didn't read it. And I wish I had, but I didn't read. Like, I got halfway in and I was like, there's some bad bits in this. I think it's, like, generally okay, sort of bolter porn, but there's some, like, grievous errors. And just to say, as someone, who, like, reading it,
the sentence structure, and there's like a lot of errors in the text. You know, like I've had to go back a lot of times because I'm saying things and they don't make sense to me, so I'm not saying them right. You know, like the context of the sentence. I'm like, that's really bad structure. That's really bad writing, I have to say. it's been pretty weird. Plus, as well, I don't know if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the Crimson Fists were never on Armageddon during the Second War. That's a mistake. I don't see what, and as well, like I'm pretty well up on the Second War for Armageddon, as much as you can be. The Orcs, they didn't invade the Deadlands, you know what I mean? Like, Ghazghal was just a warlord then. It's before, like, he spent 50 years learning how to be the baddest warlord in the galaxy and learning all these tricks and stuff. You know, like, he was just like a sort of standard, powerful Orc war boss at the time, not like the prophet of the war like he is now, you know? Anyway, it's fine. I hope you enjoyed it. It's got some good bits in it. I've just realised that's another story about Dreadnoughts. I'm probably going to try and avoid them for a little bit because I've done three now. So, you know. Anyway, thanks everybody for watching. Please remember to like, share if you can, if you know anyone who would enjoy this. Subscribe if you're not subscribed. Hit the bell so you get notified when I do stuff. I'm going to probably do a bit more live stuff over the next couple of weeks. So join me in them. And thanks to everybody supporting the channel. You can see all your names here. I really appreciate that. It really does help me massively. Lads, so if you'd like to become a YouTube member, please do. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, please do. I will see you next time for more stuff. See you later. Cheers. Bye-bye.